Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here to have another conversation I'm hoping helps your business grow. Are you familiar with telehealth and telehealth solutions? It's the whole idea that you could get medical help, a doctor, a nurse, all kinds of different medicine and solutions for your health and do it over the internet. And why is that important? We're going to talk all about that during today's episode. Now, before I get too far into that and introduce you to who I'm speaking with today, the Economic Development Corporation of Kansas City, Missouri is proud to support the dreamers and doers of our great city through a variety of programs, including Launch KC and KC Up. If you're in or around the Kansas City area, learn more about how they can help you by visiting edckc.com. There's going to be a link for that in the show notes. And, you know, if you haven't listened for any episodes in the past, first off, Startup Hustle is in Kansas City, and Kansas City is actually mainly in Missouri. I probably blew someone's mind there. That's right. The Kansas City Chiefs play in Missouri, but they have a lot of great programs, and they've been a great supporter of Startup Hustle. And today's guest is a member of their recent social venture studio. If you want to apply for grants or to be a part of Launch KC, go to launchkc.org. You can also find info at edckc.com. That is a mouthful to say. If you say that five times in a row, really quick, you won't get it right. With me today, I've got Dr. Shelley Cooper, and she is the CEO and founder of Diversity Telehealth. We are going to talk. She's actually been on the show before. So I guess I'll just go ahead and say, Dr. Cooper, welcome back to Startup Hustle.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
I'm looking forward to talking about this. I've actually done some episodes in the past about telehealth. Now, your prior episode, which there's also a link to in the show notes, was about bootstrapping tips for startups. That was a popular one, by the way. I don't know if you even knew that.
No, I didn't know that. Yeah, that's good to hear.
I think it's because all of us as startup founders were bootstrapping at some point, and that's good stuff to know. Now, what I really want to know is a little bit more about your backstory.
Well, my backstory begins here in Kansas, but no, I'm just being funny. my backstory actually starts with me being an educator. I started in business and then decided to become a teacher, and I taught for 25 years. During the last part of that 25 years, I decided to get a doctorate, and the doctorate is in instructional technology and distance education. Most people don't know what that is, but it's delivery of a service from a distance. Okay. And the service I decided to deliver is the service of medicine. And so without being an MD, a medical doctor, a medical degree, I have an EDD, which is an educational doctorate. So delivering medicine from a distance using HIPAA-compliant technology is what I decided to do. And in doing that, I decided to start Diversity Telehealth, left the classroom, and that was quite a few years ago. So Diversity Telehealth has been around for 10 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
2012 is when
now,
I started.
Now, you're part of the, as I mentioned, the EDCKC, and that is really hard to say really fast or four or five or a bunch of times in a row. But that is, so the Economic Development Corporation of Kansas City exists to help businesses like yours, or really businesses at various stages, industries, or people trying to accomplish a specific mission. So they're here to help develop the economic environment. And they do that through grants or various different things. And you are part of the Social Venture Studio, and which all of your, could we say, classmates will be on the show too. So look forward to those episodes. But how has it been getting involved with them?
It's been amazing. And SVS, or Social Venture Studio, we're all social entrepreneurs, which means we kind of fall into two categories. Some of us are 501c3, which means we are tax-free and charitable contributions can be made. And we're also for-profit. So they're non-profit and for-profit. And what we're doing is we're trying to change the world. We're trying to make the world a better place with our products, with our services. And so for Diversity Telehealth, it is a for-profit company, but I also have a 501c3 not-for-profit arm called Diversity Telehealth Community Network. And with that, we provide telehealth resources for homeless folks, for families in transition, for children who may not have the resources that they need, their families may not have it. So we raise money and we make those telehealth services at no cost to underserved communities.
So let's stop and define a couple of things. When we talk about 501 and all that, these are not-for-profit organizations.
Not-for-profit organization, an organization that has CEOs and staff members, the same that a for-profit company would have, but their mission is one in that they are trying to make the world a better place. And in doing that, they're able to accept charitable contributions and folks can write those off. The donors can write them off and the recipients are able to operate their companies with those donations.
Yeah. And there's some specific tax benefits and other things we don't need to get into, but
That's right.
Intended to make things easier for the donor and the recipient company.
Exactly. Exactly.
I'm saddled with all kinds of taxes, doctor. Maybe we should talk about that. Or do I?
You should give away more money.
I do. But maybe I need to give more of it to you.
That's right. I agree.
When we talk about underserved communities, that can be a pretty broad definition. You mentioned quite a few people. One of the things that, to the best of my understanding, that telehealth has also reached out to has been, there's a lot of like rural communities that really struggle to get doctors and the kind of medical care. Does that also classify as underserved?
It definitely does. As a matter of fact, there's a program that I'm a part of right now. HRSA, which is a government agency, funds the Head Start program. It also funds some of the monies to federally qualified health centers. And with that in mind, they put out a challenge called the P4 Challenge. And you'll have to Google it to find out what the other three P's are. But basically, what it's trying to do is improve early wellness visits for young ones, for kids going into kindergarten, Head Start. And so Diversity Telehealth has partnered with Head Start, Swope Health, and so the three organizations together are working in Excelsior Springs. I was just there yesterday. Every month, they provide health care to rural citizens there, the young ones, because they have a scarcity of health care deliverers. And so when within a certain mile radius, you can't find a pediatrician, or you might not be able to find an ophthalmologist or an optician or a dentist. And so being able to provide those services to rural folks is what we do as well. So that's one of the ways that we help, through telehealth and also through providing services face-to-face. The mobile medical unit goes there and cleans teeth and performs procedures on little ones, as well as doing the immunizations and other early wellness visits.
Well, thank you for doing all that. I have a big admiration for people that do all of that kind of stuff, really the whole charitable side of things. And you know, there's, as we all should, is there's someone needs to handle some of the issues that are coming up. I mean, the underserved communities, and I know we were just talking about rural. My sister is a doctor, and with that, as she graduated from medical school years ago, I remember her talking about the struggles that rural communities are going through. And some of them are like paying off the doctor's student loans.
Exactly.
If they would come and be the doctor there for like, you know, 2 or 3 years or something like that. And I was like, wow, that must really be an issue. And that's been that's a whole nother topic. But and then underserved as well as, I mean, it just generalized is really any community or group of people that aren't able to get the same, I mean, really breaking this down in a basic way, but are just not able to get regular services or afford them, like the accessibility to services in general. Is that the broad definition?
It's access to care. Okay. And the access could be transportation. It could be financial. It could be just being able to understand the healthcare education instructions. Maybe that person isn't really able to understand when you take medication twice daily, what time of day? Do you take it both, one right after the other? Do you take one in the morning, one at night? Do you need to have empty stomach, full stomach? So there are a lot of different ways that medicine can be taken, but if we don't understand how that medicine needs to be ingested, then sometimes it doesn't really do what it's meant to do. So part of what we're doing in underserved communities is trying to educate patients and trying to also provide different ways that they can receive the healthcare. And telehealth is one of those ways.
Yeah, telehealth's it's an outstanding way to look at modern technology's ability to have a far and broad reach. And you know, I remember here in Kansas City, which is the home, once again, the home of Startup Hustle, we were the first major city so we partnered with Google to do Google Fiber, and we're the first major city that had gigabit internet. Now that's a pretty common thing now, but I remember when it first came out, that was it attracted a ton of startups here to Kansas City, and some of them were tele something related, mm-hmm. because that pipeline, that wide open pipeline of bandwidth made this possible.
Right.
And you also look at things like Starlink, you know, Elon Musk's satellite network that mm-hmm. is now going to deliver. So it's one thing to have telehealth, but if you can't even get in the tele side of it because you're in the middle of Africa or
right.
who knows, the middle of Montana. I mean,
exactly.
These are same kind of like connectivity issues mm-hmm. somewhere. But yeah, that future is right on top of us. And I think it's going to generate a golden age of helpfulness and entrepreneurship. So cheers to you on that. Now,
yes.
When it comes to your company, you actually used to be called Sure Show, right?
Yes. Initially starting out, and let me give you a little background on Sure Show.
Yeah, and tell us why you changed the name too.
Well, yeah, here's how Sure Show actually got started. I've been working, as I mentioned, I completed the doctorate in instructional technology and distance ed. And in doing that, I was able to work with some of the federally qualified health centers like Swope Health. And in working with Swope Health and some of the other FQHCs, we discovered that they had a pretty high no-show rate. And that high no-show rate contributes to discontinuity of care for patients, and it also contributes to lost revenue for the providers. And in having that lost revenue, that does not allow the clinics to do all that they need to do. And so I thought to myself, okay, my dissertation topic was on the benefits and barriers of telehealth. And if we're working with telehealth, if we're providing telehealth to individuals, why can't we provide that telehealth when there is a no-show? So a lot of clinics have a really high no-show rate. The average no-show rate is about 1 in 4. So 25% of those appointments end in a no-show. And I just talked about the barriers to having something like that happen, how it's not really serving the community. At the same time, the day before Valentine's Day in 2018, my father passed away very unexpectedly. And when we found out that he had a medical appointment just a few weeks after he'd passed away, we were, of course, distraught and upset. And since I'm not an MD, I couldn't have treated him. So I thought to myself, what about all of these open slots? What about all these no-shows? what would have happened if there had been a no-show and someone would have called and said, Mr. Brown, we have an opening. We're using telehealth. Would you like to have a telehealth visit? Because the coroners said he was anemic and dehydrated, and those were the only things they could really find, besides him being 87 years old. But what I wanted to do was make it so that no other person would need to go through something as senseless as that. There are no shows, there are open slots, there's telehealth available. Why can't we bridge the two together? So I decided to create an app called Sure Show to make sure people show up. And so that's, I don't know, it sounds kind of dorky, but that was what I decided to call it. And Sure Show was getting a lot of traction, a lot of attention. And with some startup stories, I'm sure you hear that sometimes one founder has one idea and the other founder has another idea. And pivoting is what startups are for. And so what ended up happening was as I mentioned earlier, the P4 challenge came about right about the time that my co-founder and I were deciding that we were going our separate ways. And I decided to take Swope Health and Head Start up on their offer. And I decided to tweak or pivot from strictly working with adults to focusing on children. And we decided to change the name of Sure Show to Come On Now. And with Come On Now, we're encouraging parents to bring their children in for early wellness visits and come on in and take care of your kids. And so now the name of the software is called Come On Now. It's available in the Google Play Store and the App Store. It has several users, not only in the rural area of Excelsior Springs, but also at Emmanuel Family and Child Development Center, at Martin Luther King and Prospect.
So.
In Kansas City.
Yeah, well, sure. We were talking about that before we hit record. I was like, now you know people listen to this all over. So yeah, I looked it up. Promoting pediatric primary prevention.
Good, good.
Say that three times in a row.
I can say it once. That's why
promoting
you need to Google
pediatric
it.
Primary. This is actually, this whole entire show is now dedicated to Peter Piper picked a pack of pickled peppers. She sells seashells
by the seashore.
That's what I heard. I don't even know if it's true. You can't say it. It's not true. You know, when you talk about rebranding and pivoting and changing, there's been. Facebook's a good one. They're now Meta. Subway used to be called Pete's Super Submarines. And then one, an often sponsor of this show, Gusto, was once Zen Payroll. So it's not an uncommon thing to rebrand. And you know what? Things change. So sometimes you have to change with them. So as I mentioned, you were on a prior show with Lauren and you talked about bootstrapping tips for startups. So how has the last year been since you recorded that show? Like, what's new to update us on?
Still bootstrapping. A wonderful thing, as you mentioned earlier, is a social venture studio that came along with non-dilutive funding. So I didn't need to surrender any equity for that financial contribution. Diversity Telehealth is really doing a lot here in Kansas City, Missouri. And with that, the earnings from Diversity Telehealth is actually funding the development of the Come On Now software platform. With that, we will raise funds at a later date, but right now we're bootstrapping. We're very frugal. As people mentioned to me, I can pinch a penny till it screams. And so that's what we do as founders.
I have never heard that one. Yeah, pinch a penny till it screams. That makes a lot of sense. We keep joking about Kansas City, but you know, it really is so misunderstood. People, you know, I think that Kansas City is in Kansas, and it is part of it, like the small part of it. Right. I live in Kansas. I live in the Kansas side. I always have, but you learn there's this invisible line that runs through our city that honestly just makes things kind of a pain in the butt.
It really does. And actually, I used to live in Kansas City, Kansas until 3 weeks ago. Yep. We just moved across the state lines.
Different rules, different taxes,
licenses,
different licenses,
utility companies. Everything.
It's hard to get people to agree when one side of the city wants one thing and the other side doesn't. And then you got to try to make sure that like you mentioned, like our stadiums where the Chiefs and the Royals play, those are in Missouri.
That's right.
But I'm willing to bet on most nights, the people that are going to them are just as much from Kansas as they are from Missouri.
Exactly.
So who pays for the stadium? Where do we do that? And man, I've lived here my whole life. Well, most of my life, but this is home for me and it's a challenge. Now with that, we want to grow KCMO. So let's grow. This is the Economic Development Corporation of KCMO's tagline, and it represents how we work with businesses, large and small, and just starting to locate and grow in the great city of Kansas City. You know, and if you talk to them, yeah, they're in Missouri, but they really want the best thing for the whole city.
True.
And we're sitting here chuckling about which side of the line, and you know, you kind of don't even get to notice it. Now, they do a lot of great things at edckc.com, including Launch KC, which is doing grants and a grant competition. That's how that whole program started. Then they pivoted it a little bit,
right,
and we're working on the people that were in the Launch KC. So we've been involved with them for years now, and both at Startup Hustle and at Full Scale, my business, who's given development credits to some of the companies that have been in there. And you know, they're just still continuing to do what the best thing for them and everyone else is. So thanks to everyone at the Economic Development Corporation of Kansas City. Once again, go to launchkc.org and learn about how to maybe get free money. Did you get some free money?
I'm applying for it.
There you go. Yeah, I think everyone should. Why not? I mean, it's you mentioned one thing about non-dilutive funds, and you know, that's an important thing for a lot of businesses, especially like yours. You know, that's right. You know, with that, you mentioned other forms of funding coming in. Being a not-for-profit, that's got to be challenging.
Well, since Diversity Telehealth is for-profit,
okay,
that pays quite a few of the bills.
Got it.
Whenever I raise money for Diversity Telehealth Community Network, it's normally either through a Facebook fundraiser about my birthday, July 28th. It's still open. I haven't closed that fundraiser on Facebook. Just a shameless plug. Or if
I'm looking for it, I'm going to make a donation.
Good. Thank you. So what we're trying to do is really make telehealth available for anybody in any area, regardless of their economic situation, their educational level, or really what they're able to do on their own.
Okay.
So healthcare should be available to everybody.
So right now, as we speak, I'm donating $100.
Seriously?
Yeah, it's doing it right now. It's
wonderful.
Spinning, assuming that my card doesn't get declined. It didn't. It doesn't. You're good. You're
good
close
deal.
You are close to your goal now. So there you go.
Wonderful.
And that was from me, not from the company.
Oh,
too.
Thank so you.
Not that that matters. But
no, I appreciate
you
that. You know, that is a tax write-off, just so you know.
Yeah, it's if I get the receipt for that, that's great. If not, that's not, I didn't do it for that reason. So, you know, back to that relationship, mm-hmm, with Diversity Telehealth and all that, how's that, I mean, I still think that's going to be a challenge, because I think that a lot of the places that money come from don't want to hear that you afterward.
Well, the thing is, what telehealth does, it bridges the gap between having access to care and going to the emergency room. Mm-hmm. And eventually, even though we have our healthcare insurance we pay, we also pay taxes.
Yep.
So eventually, folks who use the emergency room as their primary care physician are really spending a lot more money on care that can be done in other ways. And so when we allow care to take place outside of the emergency room, we're really saving ourselves money and we're saving tax dollars for the city.
I think that's something that I remember when telehealth was first becoming a thing, and I remember kind of thinking about it, and I'm like, man, I wonder how insurance companies are going to feel about it. And then I've really learned that they really embrace it,
right,
because it's cheaper.
It's cheaper.
It makes a lot more sense. And as you mentioned, like going somewhere like the emergency room, or I think the pandemic really pushed a lot of that stuff like into the spotlight rather than the side stage. I mean, am I right?
Oh, you're exactly right. And actually, March 20th of 2020, that second week in March, the telehealth usage was a lot lower. The third week in March, March 20th is the week prior to March 20th, was much lower. But March 20th itself is a dividing line. And if you look at what was reimbursed by Medicare and Medicaid in the form of telehealth, it just skyrocketed between March and May of 2020, because Friday you could go to the doctor, sit in the waiting room and see your doctor face-to-face. By that Monday, doctor's offices were closed. And that's when people said, hey, maybe I can get medical care without going to the doctor's office, which is what I've been pushing for a long time, So unfortunately, it took a pandemic to open the eyes of a lot of people to see there are other alternatives for receiving healthcare that don't involve taking a half day off from work, taking your kids out of school, and driving across town, especially for those folks who are in rural areas and they have to drive hours and hours for a basic appointment. So I believe telehealth saves lives, and it saves time and saves money. It's more convenient.
I think another key with telehealth, and I buy in to all of the mission statements there, but I think one thing that, you know, there's so many people that just don't go to the doctor because it's actually, it feels inconvenient.
Right.
So even if you do, these aren't necessarily even underserved people. Right. I'm on that list. I'm not underserved. I'm undercommitted to going to the doctor as much as I need to. Like, I was even just, you know, pay really big healthcare premiums for myself, my family, and the employees at Full Scale. Mm-hmm. And I look back at it, and I even told my wife, I was like, I should just start paying cash for this stuff because I don't ever use it. And I need to be better about that. And one of the reasons is you know, it everyone knows, you mentioned it, well, it's a lot easier. Telehealth can open up that door for me a little more, because if the doctor is a few minutes late, I'm not going to get super antsy.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's kind of the historic thing with doctors. And actually, I can't remember the name of the company. It was one of our New Orleans top startups, and they were helping solve the problem of late doctors, basically.
Really?
Yeah, they're using an AI and machine learning algorithm that would basically look at the actual data of every doctor, because I think doctors don't want to be late. They're not trying to be late, but some of them just are.
And that's true.
You also don't know what kind of emergencies could happen or the regularity of them. And those things are tough to predict. But in certain cases where doctors took longer than, you know, maybe they're scheduling, you know, four appointments an hour for simple checkups. Mm-hmm. And if they were only on historically getting three of them done on time, it would kind of make those adjustments
and right.
booking availability.
Okay. Is that the Doc Pace?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it was them. It was either them or, well, no, I think Doc Pace, and that was the company. Do you know them?
Just heard about them out in the lobby. Out
oh,
there.
Okay. Okay. The, yeah. That was probably them, because you were talking to our show producer. So she would know. Thank you for doing our job, Dr. Cooper. But no, that was DocPace was, that might have been a component of what they did, but theirs was more about that. Why do I have to fill out the same darn forms every time? Right. So that was their thing. But I believe that could have been the second half. I don't know. I feel like there was two different ones, but.
Well, there's Modern Health or Modern?
Modern something? Health is here. That's Modern and with an RN, and
right.
that's Caressa Hutchinson. She's actually been on the show a couple times.
Great. She I'm was, trying to meet her.
Yeah. Well, we can make that happen.
Great.
She was on our top startups list this year, and they do, that's kind of similar to what you do, but it's like, but it's specifically a nurse.
Okay. I see.
Yeah. So like, and it's almost like having a project manager for your health.
I see.
Which is, as I, you know, my parents have both passed, and my dad recently, but I've gained a whole
Sorry
new.
Sorry to hear that.
Thank you. I have gained a whole new appreciation for the complexity of keeping that kind of stuff going.
And, right.
You know, as I mentioned, my sister's a doctor, and she did a saintly job of doing the things that I mean, sometimes I'm looking at like 15 different pills, and I'm like, what? So she's like,
Good.
Yeah, so thank you, Robin. But yeah, there's a lot to keep up with. And so theirs is everything from like, actually, sometimes you don't need to speak to doctor someone another. And there's,
exactly.
you know, there's just someone that can give you some medical input or help. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that's the component of that. It is a telehealth thing. And they've been working on that for a while. Now, Matt, during the shortly after the pandemic, got moving. Matt Watson and I did an episode about, we predicted who we felt the winners and losers of the pandemic would be. And telehealth was like, well, tele anything.
Right.
Cause we had obviously tele learning,
telehealth. That's right.
What are other tele things that we can think about? I mean, you meant tele education.
Yes. Distance education. As I mentioned, my degree is in instructional technology and distance education. So, and currently I'm teaching a tele course through Nova Southeastern University, where I earned my doctorate. So that started yesterday. So one of my many hats I'm wearing is teaching a distance education course. And several of the parents, well, millions of parents, became homeschool teachers during the pandemic. So they were able to see exactly what goes into writing lesson plans and grading papers. And it's not really as easy as a lot of people consider it to be. So making sure that those HIPAA compliant types of encounters take place for telehealth, it's just as important to make sure that the Zoom connections are secure. So data breaches, all of those types of things are important when we consider doing anything virtually where the service is provided through technology and the two participants are in two different locations. So
when she mentions HIPAA, it's Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. And here in the United States, that is falls under five categories, which, well, first off is privacy.
Privacy, exactly.
Yeah, and that's like rule number one. Then transactions and like code sets rule, security rules, unique identifier rules, and enforcement rules. And these are all just things that I think that they all kind of stem and start from the privacy piece.
Right, keeping the patient information, yeah, protected healthcare information needs to remain protected. So in any way possible, not revealing patients' names or what they're going to be seen for or who their providers are, any of that type of information would be considered protected healthcare information.
Well, and then having some security standards around actually protecting them.
Exactly. Where it's stored, how it's retrieved, all of those types of factors are important in remaining HIPAA compliant. And the Come On Now platform is connected to HIPAATRAC, and HIPAATRAC maintains our HIPAA compliance. And so what we do is when there is a no-show, as I mentioned earlier, we contact folks and let them know there's opportunity for a telehealth visit. Yeah. With the project we're doing, the P4 Challenge, we're notifying families and letting them know there's opportunities for you to bring your young ones in, and they can accept it online, receive a notification through the app, and it's all free for the patient. There's a small amount that's paid for by the providing agency. So we've had a lot of success with the Come On Now platform.
I read an article recently that when it comes to just missed appointments in general, because we own Gigabook, and that's online booking.
Okay.
We are not a HIPAA platform because that's really complex and
expensive.
And there's a lot. Yeah, and expensive is the main thing. But with that, I always get anything that involves booking or schedulings or like any no-show kind of stuff, because online booking and just simple automation of notifications and reminders can make a world of difference.
Exactly.
Because people just forget.
That's
right.
Forget
stuff. It's just that simple. It's not that they don't want to come a lot of times or that they can't come. It's just they literally forgot and they find out about it afterward.
Right.
I was reading an article the other day that said that missed appointments just in general was like a multi-billion dollar a year.
16 billion.
Yeah, like huge. Is that what it was? So 16,
there's
billion. A number.
When we look at the number, if we're looking at 1 in 4 medical appointments end in no-shows, and that's an average, it's lower for specialists like neurologists.
Was that just for
like
medicine?
That. 16 just for medicine. For
okay.
Just
so
for medicine. So it's much
it's
higher.
It's like multi-billion.
Yeah,
I mean, we're talking about everything from missed car appointments to a personal trainer.
The orthodontist, the accountant, the lawyer, architect, all of those.
Yeah. So. And here's the thing. If you're a small business owner, it's lost revenue.
That's true.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not even, if we just look at it from a business perspective, I mean, these are things that what can you do to make people actually show up? Another thing that, you mentioned with SureShow and Come On Now is also a lot of businesses experience. You look at like a service business that, say, an air conditioning repair place,
right,
and they're at somewhere from 9 a.m. to 11, and they don't have another appointment until 2
right.
o'clock to 5. And, but here's the thing is the employee is still getting paid.
Exactly.
In the middle of that. And that's, for the business, that's lost. I mean, that's sunk cost.
Opportunity
yeah,
there.
And there's opportunity. So, and then other things that I've seen out there are actually working on dynamic pricing, because there are, and that's back to the machine learning kind of thing. Like, hey, these are the spots where you're always booked. Maybe you should charge more.
Right.
So like this is your most in-demand stuff. And I'm a big believer in that. I think that if everyone wants the same spot and only one person can get it, I mean, it's a free market economy. Like, as a business, you might want to consider that.
Supply and demand. And, yeah. And it's funny you should mention that, because the earlier version of the SureShow platform doesn't have as many bells and whistles as the version we're working with right now. So I've been speaking with my developer about what can we use that for? We can rebrand that. So we can change the color palette. We can make it change the words, because a lot of times when I go to the alterations shop or the shoe shop or even getting jewelry repaired, when do you know if your items are ready? Yeah. And how much is it going to cost? And they give you these tiny little tickets that no one can ever keep up with. And so, and they call you, which takes a lot of individual time on that employee's schedule. And so we've decided to rebrand the earlier version to be It's Ready. And we're working with a pilot now with some of the alteration shops and dry cleaners and shoe shops, so that they can let people know your shoes are ready. It costs this amount and you can pick it up. So with that, very, very easy transition, another vertical, like notification that you mentioned. So our number one focus is the Come On Now platform in the medical space. But we also have this little side hustle gig called It's Ready. And It's Ready will be ready very, very soon.
You know what's crazy is that people think that scheduling is easy. It is wildly complex. And it's the act of putting, I've learned this at Gigabook, which is, so Gigabook's fully customizable, which if I had to go back and do it again, I would. Because you have to build everything like five times more to make it customizable. If I could have done it again, I had a time machine, I'd go back and just completely master an industry or a genre. Cause you know, people will call me up and they'll say, "Hey man, I think Gigabook would be great for my cousin." Okay. What does she do? Oh, she's a hairstylist. And I tell them, I'm like, don't go find one of the platforms that's already made for what she already does. Cause they've already, you don't have to go through and customize it. So the niche that we filled is actually filling the niche for people that don't have a niche, like that don't have an industry specific platform.
Really?
Yeah. That's the customizable side of things. And we openly admit it when we talk to people, like if you have an industry specific platform, I just told someone that the other night. It was actually India who runs the selfie
India
suite.
Yeah.
She was talking to me. She was like, "Well, should I be using Gigabook?" And I was like, "Probably not." And she said, "Well, why? I might save some money." I said, "Even if you did, it'd probably be a big pain in the ass to change it over. If you have something that's working for your business, stick with it." But yeah, so they have like more like a ticketing kind of thing.
I see.
It can be a little different. So there's all, you know, the thesis of my statement here is don't assume that any software that you use or whatever is easy to build.
Because it's not.
Because, so putting something on and off like a singular instance on a calendar is not difficult. What is difficult is the million if-thens and the combinations and the routing and all that. And if you charge money, then you got to have it connected to an invoice. And then if you got to be able to credit it, and what if they want to pay a deposit? What if they cancel? What if they want to reschedule? You're like, what? And then for us, we have widgets that you install on your website. So you're going to make it work on someone else's really bad technology a lot of times. Gigabook users, upgrade your website.
You're giving me a headache.
That's my point. It goes on and on. We even do like add-on sales, group sales. You can book things like rooms. And then what about when you need to pair them? What if you have 5 batting cages, but you have 10 instructors? You can't have the 6th person teaching a hitting lesson not in a batting cage. So it gets wildly complex. And really the main thing, the biggest account that we have is actually at Full Scale, our own company.
Really?
And, we use it to power all of our, we have 1,000 people a month that apply for a job at Full Scale. Do it for all of our interviews. It routes people to the appropriate interviewer. And then when our clients want to talk to a potential team member at Full Scale, that helps them schedule there as well. So it's a lot. So it's crazy after all these years and, you know, users and whatever that, the biggest enterprise user is still us. It's created you mentioned just the amount of time that a business could spend like calling someone.
Right.
And then, you know, the reason I built Gigabook was I got tired of people asking. They're like, you know, it's actually a friend of mine. I had a dog grooming studio and I went over, I kept calling and I was trying to get a hold of her because I was going to get married the next day. I was supposed to drop my dog off. And I was like, oh my God, they're not open. The one thing my soon to be wife told me to do was to drop off the dog at the kennel. And I was like, and there's no one there. And I drove all the way over there, like cursing, sweating, and worried with dogs sticking their heads out the window the whole time. You know, it's like, all right, so we're going to go do this. And then I got there and there was a lady in the back, like washing a huge dog. So she couldn't answer the phone.
Oh no.
And I kept thinking, I was like, it just offended my sense of efficiency and business in general. I'm like, how much money is my friend losing? Cause they don't answer the phone.
Whoa.
So as I kept thinking, because what every new bride wants is for you to have your new idea right before you go leave to get married. So yeah, that was
a spark of the idea.
Huh? That was where it started. We'd already built a lot of the stuff, and in a testament to learning that things take way longer and cost more to build, we thought we'd be done with it in 6 months. It took 3 years.
Yeah, that's true. It takes twice as long, costs twice as much, and much more aggravating.
That's your hoping.
Yeah.
That's wishful, because some people never even get to it. That's true. You never even get there. You die on the vine, or I mean, it is a treacherous road. Or you pivot or do something different. But yeah, if I could go back and do it again, I would pick something niche, you know, because I think some of the best advice that I ever received was actually during this podcast. And it was one of our, I can't remember, it was a single digit episode number, like one of the first 10. It was
really?
with Lyril Holt, the founder of CarStar. See those? So CarStar is national now, but that's a franchise. It's basically a operating system and franchise for auto body repair, because there was a very fragmented industry, and people and they're good at repairing cars, terrible at running businesses. Okay. Apparently, it's just not what their focus was. But I asked him. I said, "Well, Lyril, tell." I did the same thing. Give us a little bit about your backstory. He said, "Well, I'm a coward." And I was like, "Whoa, what do you mean? Like, you're pretty brave." And he said, "No, I'm a coward." I said, my whole approach as an entrepreneur is I want to find something that nobody's doing it, and then where I can go do it and be left alone till I get really good at it. And it was really like that was like, don't take on the giants. Like, there's riches in the niches kind of
thing.
That's
true.
And yeah, so there's a lot to be said with that. Now, that's maybe a good thing to ask is, I feel like telehealth anything, learning, all of it. Telelearning might have been one of the first major tele things, like when Skype came out and stuff like that. I remember teaching each other foreign languages and stuff like that. But how are the headwinds when it comes to your competition? I got to feel like there's not already a lot of it. They're getting ready.
Well, here's the thing. And it's so funny when you said the riches are in the niches, because we are concentrating on underserved populations, which are federally qualified health centers. We really aren't going where the people who have a lot of money are going.
Yeah.
But people also don't realize that those federally qualified health centers are funded by Medicare and Medicaid. And when they are funded by the largest payers in the U.S., there is revenue there.
That makes a lot of sense.
I'm kind of revealing my secret sauce here. But the point is, I don't want to go after the huge guys. I want to protect the smaller ones, the underserved, the underdog. And so bringing this type of service to underserved and underrepresented communities, I think, is my calling. And in doing that, we're able to recoup lost revenue for the providers, provide continuity of care for the chronic disease patients, the medically fragile, like my father. And then also we're able to help those clinics see more patients, which means they get better quality measures with those agencies that grade them on what they do. So that's my niche. That's where I'm going. And so, so far it's been I won't say an easy road. I'd have to say more of a more determined road. I know that's where I want to go. So that's where my area is. So in 2 weeks, maybe it's this week, the 27th, that's this Saturday, I think. The National Association of Community Health Centers is having their conference in Chicago. So I'm on my way there to talk to more community health centers and tell them about the Come On Now platform. hopefully get some more customers and get some interest and really push our sales up and save some lives in the process.
By the way, there are no easy businesses.
That's true.
Show me the easy ones. Let's do some of those because I haven't found any yet. If they are easier, they're still not easy, but if they are easier, they usually don't pay that well. So
that's true.
There's that part too. Once again, today's episode of Startup Hustle was sponsored by the Economic Development Corporation of KCMO. That's Kansas City, Missouri. If you're in the KC boundaries, you can find out who your business development officer is at edckc.com. That's right. You get your own business development officer. That's pretty cool. We encourage you to connect with these folks out there that are making a big difference in our business community. And while today's show was sponsored by EDCKC, today's guest, once again, was Dr. Shelley Cooper, the CEO and founder of Diversity Telehealth, and someone who does more stuff than I thought she did before, and we didn't even figure out where we saw each other recently. I don't remember.
Maybe it was Keystone. I'm everywhere. So who knows? My hologram. I send my hologram out and people think they see me, but it's fine.
I want to learn more about how that works because I'm ready for that.
Another show.
I'd invest in that tech. And why hasn't someone done that yet? I would love to be able to. That'd be great. I could send my hologram out. Would notice the hologram. They'd be like, is that a hologram or a real person? When they karate chopped, now I realize people be doing dumb stuff to my hologram. Work that out too. Maybe make it electric or something.
That's true.
Shocked.
A taser.
That could be problematic too. Because if someone actually bumps into it. Yeah.
Then they'd need telehealth.
We're going to work through iterations of this off air. So I like to ask I end my episodes with what I call the founder freestyle. I like to ask my guests that are founders what stood out from our conversation today or what kind of advice would you give to any young founders or people that want to follow in your footsteps?
I think the biggest lesson I've learned, the most important lesson I've learned as a startup founder, and hopefully others will learn from this, is when you hire or when you decide you'd like to have a co-founder, anybody like that, you are still the CEO. You are still responsible, ultimately responsible. So if something comes up and you don't know how to do it, like me being a non-technical founder, you need to learn as much as you can about that. Do not abdicate. You need to delegate. So make sure even if you don't know how to code, you know what type of code your software is in, you know where it's stored, you know how your product is made, you know who the suppliers are, because when you don't know your company, it's easy for you to lose your company. So it's really important for you to stay on top of all that pertinent information because you are the chief executive officer and the buck stops with you.
Well, I'll add on to that if I might. I was driving here this morning and I was thinking about CEO, like the acronym, because people say chief executive officer. I am the chief everything officer.
Right.
And I have been for a very long time. And that doesn't always mean everything I want to do. It's more about everything that I need to do or everything that comes up or how any of that comes around. And I agree with you in full. I think if you don't, you need, so I have done every job at the business. Everything from taking out the trash to all of it. And some of that is me keeping my finger on the pulse of what's going on. Because I'm a non-technical founder who now employs almost 300 developers and I've become highly technical. I don't write code, but I can get into the weeds with you about a whole lot of different stuff. And I've also developed a very strong understanding of how long it should take to do things.
Right.
And I think that that's a key ingredient. Is one of the things that non-technical founders have a bad habit of doing until they either drive their team crazy and they all quit, or they just learn more, is setting unrealistic goals and deadlines that aren't really attainable. They're like, hey, we get this done in a month. And your development team's looking back at you and going, no, no, not getting this done in a month. In fact, not only are you not getting it done in a month, you're probably not getting it done in a year. And that kind of, yeah, sure, it's great to be optimistic, but I'm a realist at this point. I mean, I'm almost 50. I'm trying.
Just a baby.
There's just, well, still, but I'm looking at it. I'm like, hey, but there's a reality. And then there's like, you can be idealistic or realistic. And like, you know, and then you got to factor reality. And I think Warren Buffett said 9 women don't make a baby in a month. So it's the same. True. It's the same thing. It's like, you can't want it. There's, someone out there going, man, you can manifest all day. No,
I don't know.
No, you can manifest all day and all night. 9 women still don't make a baby in a month. I'm going to go ahead and end our show on that note.
Startup Hustle's brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.